RSL Care SA is an organisation that some might be familiar with. We've got quite a long history. We've been around for 100 years. We're involved predominantly in residential aged care places. So we have 150 residential care places all up spread between our two main sites. We also do retirement living, and we're involved in affordable housing solutions for ex-service personnel, which sort of covers a fairly broad spectrum of housing needs, including a bit of affordable housing in Wallaroo for a rural sector, which is often a hard place for us to get into from an ex-service organisation perspective. So I guess our core business very much remains the classic nursing home residential care service. And those two sites that we have, one is the War Veterans Home at Myrtlebank, which is a fantastic site. Our other one's RSL Villas at Angle Park, which is a lovely 55-bed facility.
So with regard to the accommodation that you're offering then, what's different about it?
Interesting, when you're talking about the aged care industry, the top 10 questions that people ask when they're moving into a residential care facility actually don't relate to care. The top questions they ask, the top number one question is around dementia and dementia services. That's a really growing need for the elderly community. But the other questions all relate around the nature of the service, the nature of the facility, the culture of the site, the things that are important to the resident who's moving in. So from our perspective, very much as an ex-service organisation, you find that that veteran heritage just literally drips and hangs off our walls. That sort of concept of enjoying the company that you're in and being in good company, you know, and linking that back to a service lived. They're not all veterans. We're not exclusively veteran. Of our 155 beds at the moment, I think 95 would be DVA entitled. We have a mixture of veterans and partners, widows, brothers, sisters, family members, and just normal members of the public that come to our site. But I think very much the bit that makes us different is that veteran culture and really the way that veteran identity of our residents is valued. You know, we value the hallmark events throughout the year of Anzac Day and Remembrance Day, but we also acknowledge for our individual veterans the days that are important to them, with Vietnam Veterans Day or, talking about long-term history scenarios with some of our Vietnam veterans in residential care. So on the one hand, whilst we are a classic nursing home provider like any other, very much our core focus, our reason for being exists around that veteran heritage, that veteran link, and then valuing that service, because that service doesn't stop when the residents hit our door and move into our facilities. It's a very important part of their life that we value.
You mentioned veteran culture. I think that's quite intriguing. And I think for people outside of the service community, they might not fully understand what's meant by that. So how would you describe it?
It's a good question, and it really probably depends on the scenario. To me, there's so many elements to veteran culture. There's a shared history that you need only talk to someone about their core or their job, and you know so much about them. I was a driver in transport. Okay, well, I know what that means, and I understand what that means, and I know a little bit about your history. For me personally, having served as a soldier, for example, in artillery, in 93, 94 sort of era, I have been able to link directly with an 88-year-old veteran who served in the British Army in artillery for no other reason than we have different armies, different eras, different times in our lives. But that connection that we both understood a gun line, we both understood what it meant to be on a gun line, we both understood the mechanics of it. So there's that commonality that people can find through that veteran culture. The other bit that I enjoy is the black humour bit. You know, I like the fact that, you know, our residents don't lose that spark, and in fact that really adds to the richness of our hallways, that no matter how serious or busy I might be as CEO running around the site, I'm only ever half a step away from getting a well-mannered and pointed dig from one of our residents about me being an officer or about any other sort of part of my history, and them being in the Air Force and me being in the Army, and that sort of capacity to, I guess, again, cross parameters and cross lives, but really find a common theme and a common humour, and there's nothing sacred, and all of that is just fantastic in terms of a place to be and a place for our residents.
And in terms then also of the word veteran, I think that's something else that perhaps our listeners need to have clarified for them, because as you point out, veteran is not what everyone would expect it to mean. It's not just somebody who's been overseas on operations, is it?
No, it's an evolving term, I reckon, the term veteran. I think certainly if you were to look back in the era of, say, World War One, the term veteran meant one thing, whereas for us it's a very inclusive term, veteran. For us at RSL Care SA, essentially if you've been under a hat, you're part of our crew. It may have been that you did 20-odd years in the Navy, or it may have been that you made it halfway through recruit training in 1983. But at some point, you've sort of put a hat on and that enters you into the veteran community for however long or how short that might be. In terms of how we come to understand veteran, I think there are different types of veterans. There are war veterans, for example. There are warlike veterans. There are the veterans who've served but haven't deployed, but they are all veterans. So the veteran itself identifies a cohort and a group and a culture and people who have served. But clearly within that, you also have your subsets of Vietnam veterans versus an Iraq veteran versus an Afghanistan veteran versus a Timor veteran versus a World War II veteran. And although some categories, you know, mean something as well, but then collectively we all do come together under the banner of being veterans as well.
Given then that you have such diversity in your veteran community within RSL Care, what kinds of people do you encounter on a daily basis who live in some of your homes?
We have some of the most awesome people I have met in my entire life. It's been an absolute privilege and is a privilege to share their home as my workplace. And across that, you get the kinds of opportunities to talk and interact with these men and women that you just don't get anywhere else, because you are in their home and you do get to sit down with them over a meal and share their life stories, either in just joyful conversation or perhaps towards the end of life as they're getting a bit reflective or the family members are there. And across all those parameters, some of the things are fantastic. I mean, for me personally, when I was a young recruit, I was in 15 platoon at Kapooka, which was sponsored by the Rats of Tobruk. So that meant as a young recruit, the Rats of Tobruk veterans would come and talk to us. So I was 17 years old. I was very young. And they had a very strong impression on me, these veterans and the stories that they'd tell and the things that they'd say. And I remember one of the clear stories of George, who led the push as a Tobruk veteran. He was in the forward lines at Tobruk, and the forward lines were the Germans. They used to sort of push backwards and forwards a bit, and the Australians would patrol no man's land, but sometimes the Germans would be there and sometimes we'd own it. And Pearl George was in a forward pit, was a young man then, and in the middle of the night, they would get resupplied with their food and their water and their ammunition for the day, because they couldn't get resupplied during daylight hours because they'd get shot. And then they'd just have whatever resources they were given during the night, and they'd just survive with the day with that. And the Germans would do the same thing. So George was telling me that they're one morning just before first light, and they hear this sort of banging and clanging sound coming out of no man's land. And George and his pit buddy grab their rifles and stand to and sort of look out into the darkness. And George can do a marvellous German accent, I can't. But out of the darkness came this German voice, just sort of nervously calling out for Hans, Fritz, fellas. And out of the darkness came a German with his rifle slung across his back and his arms full of food. He'd gotten lost. So this German had left his pit and gone backwards to get his food and ammunition for the day, and he was carrying it back to his buddies. But of course, he's become a bit geographically embarrassed in the night, lost his position and gone staggering off into the darkness, and was getting quite concerned because he couldn't find his German mates. And as George tells me, the first thing this poor German bloke heard out of the darkness was, "G'day." And there was the note that he'd perhaps wandered a little bit too far. And I said to George, I said, did you shoot him? And George said, "No, we didn't shoot him. We just took his food and his rifle and sent him back." So that connection with me as a young soldier, when I first entered the army, literally my first days of the military that I met George, and when I first came to RSL Care, I walked into our facility at RSL Villas, and one of the first residents I met was a man by the name of Cliff Bryce, who was a Rat of Tobruk veteran. So immediately I felt a connection with Cliff, and very quickly was able to share some stories. And I knew enough about the history to really value the stories that he was telling me, because I could have put them in a bit of a context of place and time. And Cliff was, he's passed away now. He passed away this year, aged 97. But he was a really beautiful, gentle man. And it was almost difficult to reconcile this wonderfully gentle, humble man with the horrors and the needs of combat in the deserts of World War II against Rommel. Perhaps it was made a little bit easier because Cliff was a stretcher bearer. So I guess when everyone else was taking life, Cliff's job was to save it, and that made a lot of sense to me. He was a big man, so that makes sense too, that he would have been hauling around people backwards and forwards. He used to go right up to the front lines under fire and pick up wounded Australians. And I asked Cliff once, I said, "Mate, did you get shot? The Germans are right there." And he said he was never really worried about the Germans were quite disciplined in turn. They had the Red Cross armbands on and they weren't carrying rifles because they were stretcher bearers. And he said the Germans were quite disciplined about that. And he said if they did happen to shoot you, they didn't mean it.
That's comforting.
Which I just think is a marvellous way to think of it. Although he did follow that up with it. Although it didn't matter how fast you were, you couldn't outrun the shrapnel. And had cases, although that's a bit of a funny line from him, where his mate and his stretcher bearer team were blown up and he lost his mate in that instance. And as he described, they went back that night and got the night off, had a stiff scotch, and then went back at it the next day. you know, that kind of history that we then have the opportunity to share in those stories and spend those time with the residents and really talk to them. And Cliff was a fairly quiet sort of guy and didn't get a lot of visitors, and had the privilege of bringing my daughters in to meet him on Christmas Day for a couple of consecutive years, where really in the hope that one day, they were still quite young, but in the hope one day they will remember back to the time that they met a Tobruk veteran. It was probably lost a bit on them in the moment, and you know, they were more impressed by the fact that he went 8 months without a shower than anything else. But I do hope in time that they'll look back and go, you know, yeah, actually, I met a veteran, you know, back when I was 10, and I met him on Christmas Day, and he told me all these stories. So I do hope that sort of resonates in their life as well.
You mentioned the impact and resonance on your daughters,
yeah.
And clearly there's been an impact and a resonance on you.
Yeah.
I suppose I'm interested to know a bit more about that, because given that you're also still serving with the Australian Army as a reservist now, you used to be full-time.
Yes, that's correct, yeah. Yep.
What kind of impact have those stories had on you in terms of perhaps thinking about your own experience of the military?
I guess in some ways with my military experience is still evolving. I've 23 years in the regular army and now serving in the reserves. So I haven't really gotten too reflective on that yet, because it's still part of my active history, I suppose. You do have a little bit of a thought process when you leave the regular army, but it's still a thing and it's still part of my life, and I've still got the uniforms in the cupboard. But certainly in terms of how the residents impact on me, heavily, to be honest, in a very positive way. Sort of as I said before, there is that connection with the residents that you can make. You've got more and more Vietnam veterans entering our care now. They're quite young, but their first sort of forward edge of that Vietnam veteran population have had quite complicated lives, and so we do find ourselves with 68, 69-year-old men at the moment, exclusively from the Vietnam veteran population, who are entering residential aged care, whereas the likes of Cliff came in at 90. That's not because they're Vietnam vets. That's just because they're the forward edge of that population. You know, we've been here for 100 years, and our history has shown us that the forward edge of every veteran population is exactly the same. The World War I veterans that we had came in very young, and really we started off as a contemporary veteran accommodation program because they were homeless. And as the minutes of the meetings that I've read from back then said, in one set of minutes they described these men who were back from Gallipoli, literally, as being alcoholics and no-hopers. Now we understand much better about PTSD and the like, but when we first started 100 years ago, it was a homeless centre because there weren't sort of those assets around in Adelaide at the time, and they needed a lot of support and help. And as an organisation at the time, we didn't think we'd be around all that long, because we thought, you know, these guys wouldn't need help for that long. But of course, then as the World War I population moved through the age bracket, more started needing some care. And then, of course, a little old thing called World War II happened. And, of course, then the forward edge of that population came to us, and Korean veterans. And we had a Vietnam veteran who passed away earlier this year, Peter. Peter was age 69 when he passed away, and he moved in when he was 50. So he'd been in residential care for 19 years. Really is quite a young man, you know, from 50 to 69. There's plenty of 69-year-olds running around the country doing a whole range of things. But he'd had a very complicated life after his service. But equally, there's plenty of Vietnam vets that are out running around at 69 who aren't in my care, but they'll be the ones that'll maybe come to us later. In terms of the impact then, particularly looking at the Vietnam veterans that we have at the moment, we run a very specific Vietnam veterans program, which helps Vietnam vets who are in need to transition into residential care, which is a difficult thing for them to do because there aren't any other providers providing a contemporary service for Vietnam veterans, because they're not out in the residential aged care population in any number. So the Vietnam vets can be really quite isolated. So what we're doing, we're working very hard to bring them together and to form a really close social network, and had lunch with them today, actually, out under the trees at the War Veterans Home, a group of a dozen Vietnam vets who are all in the residential care space who come together and share that sort of community. I guess, going back to your question around what impact they have, you get to know these guys. You know, you get to share their stories, you get to share their high points and their low points, you get to share some of their fears, and I get to share mine with them. We share a common language. There is that black humour. I don't have to be too sensitive in what I say around them, which is nice as a CEO. I can let my guard down a little bit, whereas in other areas in my workplace I can't. With employees and things, I've always got to be a little bit careful. But with the Vietnam vets, I don't have to be. I can say exactly what I'm thinking and then add some, and they can do the same to me. You know, of course, we are in residential aged care, and there are hard times too. Remembrance Day just passed. I was delivering the Remembrance Day service at RSL Villas, which is a gorgeous service. It's a great little remembrance activity. We get a couple of classes in from different schools that come and participate, and the kids sing a choir and We had this fantastic year five students who'd made up poppies and floral tributes going around, and they pinned them on all the residents before the remembrance service. So just to see these kids interacting with our residents in such a way before the service was beautiful. 5 minutes before that, I was in a room with one of our Vietnam veterans who'd just passed away that morning. I knew him well. He was a lovely guy. He was clinically unwell. We knew that the end was coming for him. But to be there and to share that moment with him, and as he passed away then, and his body was prepared, you know, to lay a poppy on his chest and sort of just give him that one last touch, and then to have to step out and put on the CEO face again and then deliver the remembrance service. So it's a really sometimes a bit of an odd environment. Although I must admit, on that particular day, the remembrance service wasn't far from this resident's room. So it was kind of nice that the sounds of the remembrance service wafted through his room. A bit of a romantic, I guess, in that. But it was nice. It was nice that the sounds of the children singing, the sounds of the last post, the rouse, you know, all of these were the last sounds surrounding this man who'd given so much to his country and died before his time. And I guess as from my perspective, it's a very humbling and marvellous opportunity to be in that position, particularly for someone like him who didn't have a lot of visitors or have a lot of friends. In his final hours, the only people to visit him were fellow ex-service personnel from RSL Care. There were no family there on the day that he died, but there were ex-service people. So I'd gone and visited him. There are other residents from the facility who were Vietnam vets had gone and seen him specifically. And without that, you know, the thought of him dying completely alone somewhere just, you know, is really quite sad to me. But he wasn't. He was surrounded by those who understood him and understood his story and valued his story, liked him as a bloke, sad to see him pass, and then also the fact that it was kind of linked into Remembrance Day. For an old soldier, that's probably not a bad way to go.
Because that's an aspect of your work that perhaps people don't fully appreciate, is that sort of intangible care that goes beyond just care. It goes beyond that. And yet, that is something that's part and parcel of what you do in the industry where you work.
Yeah, and it goes back to, I think, some of the comments that you made right back at the start where we sort of spoke about what it is that makes us different. If you're a Catholic, well, you know, go to Southern Cross homes and go to a Catholic home. If you're a Lutheran, go to a Lutheran home. If you're an Italian, there's Italian services. They'll always have a mix of others. You can be a Lutheran in a Catholic home, or you can be a Greek person in an Italian home. But there's a certain vibe and a culture and an aspect that is familiar and comforting for us in the ex-service community. Yeah, you know, I often think about this, that through life, we're all involved in different groups and associations. It might be sporting clubs with the kids. It might be church groups. It might be community groups with Apex and the like. What I see in our residents and what I have seen is how many of them are alone at the end, who don't have a lot of family around, who don't have a lot of support around. And I guess that's the nature of life, that life does sometimes sort of wind up that way as friends pass away and life sort of fritters away. And time again, the connections I've seen in these residents through their residential care time while they're still enjoying life and enjoying, you know, living with us, and at the end, that it's actually the veteran community that sticks. It's ex-service people that come and visit. You know, where we are with the Plimpton Glenelg RSL comes and gets actively involved with our Vietnam vets. That's great. They actually come. They have lunch, break bread, tell stories, and they get involved with men's health issues and just talk under a tree. And as it was for the resident I was talking about before, in his last moments, it was ex-service people that came and laid hands on him and wished him well. So with that veteran bit, why is that different when so many of our other social connections across our life do fall away as our involvement in those groups fall away? And really the only thing I can come back to is the fact that it's because it really matters. It might only been a short period of your life. It might have only been 2 or 3 years. It might have only been a short period while you went through your training and then you had to leave for whatever reason. But it resonates so heavily throughout people's lives because it's important. Because it actually matters. And then we find that connection in others who we might never have served with at that era, like I do with our veterans, different eras, but that connection really does stick through. So for us as an organisation then to be able to really hang on that, I mean, that's what we're all about. That's what we do. And equally, the residents that come to us who aren't ex-service personnel, I mean, they love it. They're respectful of the culture. I think many of them do choose to come to us because we are a respected brand, if I can use the term brand. You know, people kind of understand the RSL. See us as an organisation of integrity. Feel confident that we'll do the right thing, and I think that's it's a big responsibility we carry to deliver on that. But equally, that they very quickly fit into that group as well and join into the culture and attend our Anzac Day services and attend our Remembrance Day services and get involved in that sort of veteran bit that really does, I guess, separate us out from the other aged care providers that are around the place. The War Veterans Home started mid-1915 as the Soldiers' Peace Day League And then they realised that that sounded political and thought, hang on, that's not what we wanted. So they changed the name because they weren't anti-war. They just wanted to help the soldiers coming back. And it was about the time that midway through the campaign in Gallipoli, when they started to see the casualty numbers and started to have wounded soldiers coming back, that they decided, you know, we need to do something. So they started to raise some funds. And with the help of the Germans, funnily enough, here in Adelaide, the Germans donated half of the money because no one would work with the Lutherans. The Lutherans had raised £2,500 to help the soldiers, but no one would take their money because they were German. The soldiers came back. And the soldiers went, well, we don't mind the Germans. You know, they put up a good fight. They're a good mob. So it was actually the soldiers that partnered up with the Lutherans then and combined their money to buy the Myrtlebank Farm. And that's where the War Veterans Home is to this very day. So for 100 years, as I was at lunch today, sitting under the gum tree at the front that's been there the whole time, well, soldiers have been doing that for 100 years on that site, which I think is very special. So very strongly linked in, well, indeed the whole veteran community. It's the Vietnam Veterans Federation, or whether it's the Military Motorcycle Brotherhood, or whether it's the TPI Association, or whether it's individual sub-branches of the RSL, particularly around our networks that have really supported us across the 100 years. We really are about the entire ex-service community.
Well, I suppose the final question, given that you are a veteran yourself, is when you're older, because I'm not going to ask your age... But would you take up residence in one of your homes?
I've already picked out the room.
You've already picked out the room?
Yeah, I know the room I'll have. I'm always going to be an eye on it. Just make sure it gets a nice fresh paint of coat and it's all looked after. No, look, absolutely. It's one of the things that being in residential aged care, the concept of going into aged care, I mean, people, I wouldn't want to go in aged care, I want to be at home. Yeah, of course. I mean, people stay at home as long as they can and as long as is possible. But it comes to a point where it's not possible. And nursing home care becomes a requirement. And I've got to say, though, that there are worse things in life than being of an age where moving into a residential aged care is the worst of your problems. Growing old really is a privilege. It's denied to so many. And to see the quality of life that our residents have and how much they enjoy their life and how much they contribute to each other's life and how much they contribute to all of ours around them, I am absolutely looking forward to the day that I can sit back with my feet up and my gin and tonic and sit there and watch some other CEO running around the facility trying to keep it all on track.
And what about for me, Nathan? You've mentioned a lot about men. What about women? Would I get to have a room in one of your homes?
It is an interesting point that until the year 2000, we were exclusively male. Exclusively male. And around 2000, the veteran population dynamics were changing and because the ladies generally outlived the blokes. Quite a sweet bit of our history that when news was coming that the First Lady was moving in, there was much angst and anxiety amongst the veterans. They were exclusively veteran then. And it was a sort of a case of not bloody on my watch. And they had meetings and gnashed their teeth and belted the desk. But anyway, the decision was made, we need to move with the times and we need to let ladies into the facility. And the first brave lady who moved in. But that night, the veterans who were so opposed would all wear their suits to dinner. They had their ties on, their jackets and their coats, their hair was done, the nails were clean, they spruced up beautifully to dinner. And then they went on a roster system where each night she'd dine at a different table. So she'd be hosted by a group at their table for dinner. So it was really quite sweet. Now, of course, as is the case with most residential aged care facilities, it's quite common for the ladies to outnumber the men. And indeed, we've got some fantastic service histories amongst our service women, and increasingly so. So, yes, Sharon, we'll definitely have a room for you. Yeah, absolutely. You'll be welcome to a spot.
I look forward to it. Thank you very much for coming in today, Nathan.
My absolute pleasure. Thanks for having me.